Listen up. The views and opinions of this radio show and podcast are prepared and provided by Philip D. Blackman in his personal capacity. The opinions expressed in this show are my own, and they do not reflect the view of this radio station, broadcasting platform, or any organization Philip D. Blackman is a member of. The material and information presented in this broadcast is for general information purposes only. Any and all media presented are the property of their respective owners, and its use does not imply endorsement or opposition to any specific organization, product, or service. Let's get started. Oh man, we're back! We're back! It's hump day! Yeah. Are y'all ready?
It's time!
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Hey, hello, 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 ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to another episode of the Philip D. Blackman Show. I'm your host, Philip Blackman, and welcome to the fastest hour in radio, guys. Man, what a show, right? We got a lot of fun that we're going to be looking at trying to have tonight, trying to poke out some of the fun and some of the absurdities that we're seeing in our country right now, especially when it comes to politics and politicians and, good Lord, most importantly, their voters. You know, because here's the thing. Everybody believes that politicians lie. They believe that all of them lie, really. You know, Republicans lie. Democrats lie. It's a bipartisan problem, so stop the bullshit telling each other that, oh, well, your side's worse. No, both sides equally suck. Yo, politics is a profession. And, you know, let's call it what it is. It is a profession. It is a performance art, if you will. And it should be of grave concern that there's no real means by which any politician is disciplined for telling lies in the public domain as other professionals might be. I mean, truly, their votes relentlessly defend their candidates' lies by comparing the amount of lies told versus their opponent's number of lies told, as if there is some, something in there that, well, yours lies more than me. Negative. They're all pieces of shit. And the fact that you're putting your stock, the fact that you're putting your attention into these politicians and you're validating their lies makes me crazy. I mean, we've seemed to have forgotten that a lie is a lie is a lie, regardless of the intent behind it. So tonight, ladies and gentlemen, we're going to be discussing lying in politics. And, of course, the present question, when is enough going to be enough? I'm trying to find out, when is enough enough for us as a country? But before we dive into that conversation, ladies and gentlemen, let's get it going. So I want you to know right now, we're live right now on all social media platforms. About Face Radio Facebook page, guys. Thank you. Welcome to the show. We're on Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, or Facebook, YouTube, and LinkedIn at The Philip D. Blackman Show. I'm getting out of order here in my slides. But we're also live on Twitter and Twitch for those of you people who like to follow those as well. So all of you guys, man, thank you so much. If you want to participate or you want to comment in the show, 409-245-9753 is the number from listeners across the airwaves. Again, 409-245-9753 is the number. Guys, call at your leisure. I would love to hear what you guys have to say on this topic tonight of episode number 312, A Lie is a Lie. So let's get it going, guys, right? All right, so first and foremost, man, for all of you tuning in, I see we got Randy called in from the Netherlands, Tammy, Laura, guys, all of you, and to those of you who are unidentified, thank you so much for tuning in. So I read a quote, and this is kind of what jump-started this this show, right? And the quote that I read was, it come from Albert Einstein. of all people, right? Albert Einstein once opined, he once said that there are only two things that are infinite, the universe and human stupidity. I'm not sure about the universe. Albert Einstein. You know, if you want to know what a child is thinking, watch their face. You know, the truth shines through as if children are interested in the topic, if they're alarmed or if they're quietly confused about what adults are up to. Their face tells the truth. It's all there to be viewed. But wouldn't it be great if that part of us never changed? You know, in America, we have a history of assigning importance and high praise to the institutions and the people in superior positions. Not because they deserve it, no. But because we've somehow become infatuated with the celebrity in all its forms. And let's face it, these politicians, they are celebrities. If you don't believe it, just watch, check out their social media feeds. You know, we've come to believe somehow that athletes like LeBron James are heroes and that they represent what's good about America. We believe that billionaires are inherently good and decent and they have our best interest, our jobs, and our future employment in mind. We believe that actors portray fictional characters on the big screen somehow that they come into possession of some of those great characteristics that they show themselves. I always lean back toward Ronald Reagan, you know, the actor. If you remember, he was believed to be a great leader for our country. And I truly want to argue that it's simply because he had the ability to act like a leader. You know, we honor decisions and the importance of the Supreme Court justice because they're used or they're issued forth from a position of power, a position of prestige. And that's accorded by the institution and by default of everyone who resides within. These are the creme de la creme. Or like corporations. You know, corporations apparently now have the same rights that we have afforded to the human being. And then we call it freedom of speech. You know, freedom of speech, it is an example. Even though under ideal conditions, a corporation in itself, by default, it would truly be incapable of answering a simple question. You know, we listen with rapt attention to political leaders who espouse these beliefs and support these positions that under any normal everyday condition would elicit laughter and belief. Why? We have, and I want to give you an example where I say that we have political leaders and people in power saying things that would normally be laughed at. Here's an example. Can a man get pregnant? Yes. That happened in a congressional inquiry on some wokeism BS that I'm not real sure what it was, but the question posed to this person from a politician, can a man get pregnant? And the reply to the witness was, the reply from the witness said, yes. Anywhere else in the world, that would have elicited laughter and disbelief. What in the world are they thinking? But now it's normal. They're called woke. I think the biggest reason why, if we're going to be honest with ourselves, we got to say because it's America. I mean, over the past three centuries, we've fallen victim to the same hierarchical system that prompted millions of my immigrants to leave Europe, leave it completely behind, and start over right here in the United States. Hierarchical in the sense that not everyone is the same. That there are those that are obviously very different and more important. You know, back then, someone who possessed a house, a horse, and a $100 bill is, by then, current standards, a cut above the rest. We have somehow put our stock in possessions, in what we have, what we think, and we tend to believe that because if you have more money, then you're a better person. If you have a degree, then you're smarter. Let me tell you something. If you don't know this by now, let me go ahead and help you out. A degree, money, none of that stuff, none of the things, none of the material things that happen that we possess in this life, it doesn't make us better than anyone else. I don't care who you are. I don't care what you possess or what you have. You know, those that live on estates, for instance. You know, these people, they, you know, and good for them. I'm happy for them. They have the ability to employ other people and possess power beyond what the average person has or even perceives to be desirable and thus of a higher order. Not kinder, not smarter, but just better. You know, better is really a subjective concept, but it's not so distant as to be unrecognizable. Better means being able to do more. It means being able to have more and do more. And compared to everyone else, you are better. If you are statistically higher as far as possessions, I remember as a kid, I saw a sign hanging in a garage that I worked in, and it said that he who dies with the most toys wins. I think that's kind of what we're talking about, better. I mean, if you eat at finer restaurants, and if you have finer, more elegant clothing, if you live in grander quarters, and if you don't work for a living, then by default, you are someone who appears to understand the way the system works, and you should be respected. You should be envied. So real quick, Granny Lisa Kraft, welcome to the show. Always good to see another person tuned in. Guys, as always, 409-245-9753 is the number. Text, call, whatever you want. We'll put your comments up and we'll address them as we can. But here's the thing. Envy is an emotion. And it's been permitted as long as what one envies is better than what one currently has. We're not supposed to envy anything. America's evolved its system of admiration alongside its systems of government, believing that those people who are trained in law, i.e. lawyers, allegedly they're naturally suited to a position where laws are created. Or that those who've lived their lives shaping others, coaches in all athletic fields, for example, we believe that these people are capable of shaping things far removed from stadiums. Why else do we truly vote, you know, who's into office, you know, when we start voting bodybuilders into office who become actors, who possess a supernatural ability on the screen, somehow these voters believe that they have somehow had these supernatural abilities transferred into their real life. I mean, why else would we support a candidate for a senatorial position in Georgia whose prowess on the football field is assumed to be transferable to Washington, D.C. and the job of helping run a country? Because we put too much stock into what people are. Americans are not stupid by birth. I'm going to make that very clear. We're not stupid by birth or by choice, really. I think it's more by inclination. You know, stupid's shown to be more in what we do than who we are. So the big part of me, you know, because we always hear these conversations about people being stupid and whatever the case is, you know, I don't like doing it because it's kind of frowned upon when you're writing any scholarly paper. Don't ever give a definition, right? Because that shows that it's a crutch. However, with that being said, the definition of stupid, as I found, is it's given to unintelligent decisions or acts, you know, acting in an unintelligent or careless manner, a senseless form of behavior. So how many people do we have out there in our country that are leading this country that are just quite frankly stupid? How many people do we have that are voting these stupid people in? You know, it's amazing because I truly, truly in my heart, I believe that everything that's going on in D.C. right now, everything, we are the cause. We are the problem. Our lack of ability to be able to dive in and to look at the substance, look at the issues that are presented, look at what it is. I heard a long time ago that if somebody shows you who they are, believe them. But we're not doing that. We're looking beyond the person and focusing on the party. Something, the party itself has no power. It's the people in that party. We're voting people in our governmental system right now. We're voting people by their politics alone, not about their content or their character, but their politics. You know, they're made careless by the process that we've all become subjected to, especially as of late. You know, the erosion of truth and its replacement by irrelevant and false information is running rampant. And by the slow and lengthy process of of losing your affection and your belief in yourself, as they all really experience all manner of reasons why others just seem to be better than they are. When money, when fame, when possessions become a valid measure, sometimes the only one really, when they become a valid measure of a person, how do we really compete against someone who appears to have it all? Well, I think first thing we got to say is stop competing. Let those people have their race. Let them have their things, because what they have and what they do has no effect on you. It's all YOU. You are the one. Well, you know, I voted for it because this person did. Why? That's showing your stupidity. That's showing your laziness. You know, over time, you know, we become accustomed to really start to giving away you know, to giving a right away to those people who have more in our lives. If you ever noticed, you know, the prestige, the reason why we have these spoiled brats in politics and these celebrities, the reason why we have these spoiled people is because they're surrounded by yes men and women who, yes, you're right, and they will do everything they can. They will knock over a elementary school bus just so their person can get on, you know, by themselves. You know, it's we have given everything away just on that big celebrity status. You know, we look away from those that sound right, and we focus more on those that look right. Why else would we listen to someone who we normally wouldn't like, associate with, or even allow our daughters to marry? Stupid is a state of mind. And in many cases, it is temporary. In many cases, it's temporary, but in its simplest terms, just a momentary absence of pertinent information and the ability to process it. And what that does, it results in the decisions or points of view that are not supportable, and yet they're believed above everything else. That's how your conspiracy theories get generated. Believing that vanilla ice cream is the best ice cream over chocolate or Rocky Road, it's not proof of stupidity. It's simply a personal preference. You know, believing that Superman, you know, believing that Superman's stronger than Batman, that's a personal preference because they're made up heroes. But, you know, if you saw Superman push an asteroid out of Earth's orbit, you might sway you a little bit. But, you know, believing that all vaccines are works of the devil, you know, they were created in dark, dank laboratories in communist countries or genetically altering one's DNA, it's not stupid because we might disagree with it. Mm-mm. It's stupid because we have commentators out there saying that it's based on unsupported information or claims that are held in place despite the provable scientific information to the contrary. The truth is not, a lie is always going to be, it seems like a lie is going to be accepted a whole lot more than any random truth. But you know, it's holding on to stupid and refusing to let the truth in. That is where we are right now at an inflection point in our country. That's where it's dangerous. You know, our history is scattered with false narratives and restricted information, you know, and it's kept away from others who needed it to make a rational decision. You know, I even argue that racism itself, you know, that's a good hot topic for today. You know, racism itself, it came about because of pure stupidity. You know, if you go back 100 years or a couple hundred years, you know, there's a lot of essays, there's a lot of books, there's a lot of scientific treaties by people in high positions and trusted scholars who stated categorically that white people were superior to blacks and people of color. You know, people who benefited from this information, they absolutely believed it. And those that actually disbelieved it through personal observation or kindness of heart, they fought against it. That's called the Civil Rights Movement. But this mere fact, if you want to call it, you know, it's been held on to for centuries. And it's stupid because it lacks any basis in fact. Its premise is unsupportable by any measure, and it was declared by those who needed it to be believed in order to support practices and institutions that were already in place, like slavery and Jim Crow. The only way that it's ever held up over the years is because people keep repeating that lie as if it were true, telling others that they're wrong for disagreeing, and generally not allowing the light of truth to expose the lie. Stupid. It's almost always held in place because it's beneficial to someone in power. With the 2022 midterms behind us, thank God, through favorable in many ways, there are still decisions made that left us questioning how and why decisions are actually being made in our government. With newly elected candidates still believing the 2020 presidential election was stolen, is it because it was? Is it because it's provable? No. It's because it supports an agenda. And look, this isn't just for 2020. This is 2016, 2012, 2008, 2004, 2000. Every election, right? We have these issues. It's always a steal, regardless if it's provable or not. It's easier to propagate a lie than to accept the truth that is unwanted. And Tammy has a great point right here. She says, it's easier to be deceived than convinced. I'd like to go a little further and say it's easier to fool people than to convince them they're being fooled. Absolutely. Laura says that no one is critically thinking anymore. Absolutely. That's kind of the problem. You know, the same local election processes, the same machines, and the same personnel that properly elected those same people who now claim the former president lost illegally, They make no mention of how an apparatus could do two things at the same time, rightfully put them in and rightfully take the election away from Donald Trump. I mean, they make no statement or no fact to provide any supporting evidence. They just want you to know, hey, it was stolen. Just like racism. Oh, you're just racist. How? I don't know. You just are. You know, they simply state that it's a truth. Like those that stated back in the 1700s and the 1800s that all black people were inferior. The truth is a hindrance at that point. Stupid takes over not by the strength of the position, but by the lack of it. Stupid can only exist if it's the correct information is carefully removed from the equation. A German propaganda machine that spread lies about the Jews in the 1930s Germany over and over again eventually got most Germans to believe there was a big problem that required a final solution. And here we are. An agenda removed its greatest barrier to being achieved, the people themselves. That was and is a historical example of stupid. When Justice Anthony Scalia, when he stated that a corporation had a right to free speech, which could take the form of a political donation, the companies talk about a Citizens United. How is it not one of the greatest moments of stupid in American jurisprudence, masquerading as a measured legal decision? You know, an entity, a corporation that has no corporal existence, in fact, unlike an actual human being, which cannot be persuaded to answer a question or offer an opinion on its own, somehow possesses the right of free speech. Agenda. Politically motivated executives and boards of directors, human beings now possess the right and the power to pump billions into political campaigns and thus influence and co-opt the political process while assigning this supposed right to a corporation. A hammer is not stupid if it strikes a thumb. A decision made is not stupid simply because other people disagree with it. Any of these things become stupid only when irrational thoughts, relevant data that prove the opposite is intentionally ignored or invalidated. We're seeing it all across our media. The solution? Know the truth. Seek it out. Understand it. And ensure that others know it as well. Truth is going to be our only antidote to what's ailing America right now. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to take a quick news break. Followed by regular old commercial. Guys, give me about 2.5 minutes, and we'll be back with you on the other side as we prepare to step into the narrative, the next segment that we're going to rightfully call the breakdown. Guys, stick around.
The House takes a breather. I'm Lisa Brady, Fox News. They've just adjourned until 8 p.m. Eastern after three more votes with the same results.
No member-elect having received a majority of the votes cast, a speaker has not been elected.
Republican leader Kevin McCarthy falling short a total of six times since yesterday in his bid to become House Speaker.
Members are beginning to get tired. They're beginning to get cranky with this process. They're upset about the continued voting and tensions. They are rising. These repeated votes may backfire on McCarthy. The votes over and over show that McCarthy lacks the votes to win so far.
Fox's Chad Pergram at the Capitol. 20 conservatives are standing firm in their opposition to McCarthy, while some other Republicans accuse them of playing politics and holding up an agenda that won back the House. The president heads to Mexico City soon and might make a side trip.
Next week, President Biden will participate in the North American Leaders Summit in Mexico. He hinted it may be the chance to visit the southern border. Preparing to depart after an event in Kentucky, he was a bit more definitive after a reporter's question about visiting the border.
That's my intention. We're working out the details now.
President Biden has gotten criticism from conservatives for not having gone there in person while in office.
Fox's Grinnell Scott. Republicans and some Democratic officials in border states accuse the president of failing to secure the border. The administration defends its policies while urging bipartisan work on immigration reform. Arraignment day for 19-year-old Trevor Bickford of Maine, accused of trying to kill police on New Year's Eve in New York City.
Bickford appearing before a judge virtually from a hospital bed. Officers shooting him in the shoulder after the teen allegedly shouted Allahu Akbar and charged at police near Times Square.
Fox's Christian Goodwin. Prosecutors say Bickford intended to attack government officials across the U.S. He's held without bail, facing multiple charges. America is listening to Fox News.
Uh-oh.
storm prep all over
again. What day it is? Guess what day it is? Huh? Anybody? Julie, hey, guess what day it is? Oh, come on, I know you can hear me. Mike. What day is it, Mike? Leslie, guess what today is?
It's hump day.
Woo-hoo!
Ronnie, how happy are folks who save hundreds of dollars switching to Geico?
I'd say happier than a camel on Wednesday.
Hump day!
Get happy. Yeah. Get Geico. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more.
All right, guys, welcome back. Episode number 312, A Lie is a Lie. So Tammy says in the chat before we move on, she says, find the truth for yourself, not someone else's version of it. Amen. Randy says that he says here in the chat that rights to a corporation sounds ridiculous to me. You don't have to be alive to have rights. Or am I going nuts again? Well, I think he just might be. But that is a really great point. All right. So, guys, here it is. The nexus while we're getting into the meat here. Right. The latest political firestorm. Right. And this one surrounds a representative elect. Well, now he is representative, a Republican out of New York. His name is George Santos. This guy ran his political campaign lying, embellishing on his resume on the campaign trail, and it's finally brought some renewed attention to President Biden's long history of sometimes ridiculously absurd fabrications, including his embellishments about his college career, which ironically helped derail his 88 presidential campaign. But we're going to cover both of these poster children of modern lying politics in this segment, rightfully titled The Breakdown. All right, so if you haven't been following the news, man, Representative George Santos, he's a degenerate liar. Let's just call him what it is. But the question of whether he should keep his seat, because we're hearing politicians on the Hill right now saying that Representative Santos needs to resign. He needs to give up his seat. Well, here's the problem with all that. It's not one for party functionaries or members of Congress to decide. It's for the people of New York's 3rd Congressional District to decide. This is how it works in our constitutional republic. Voters get a final say, as they should. But leaving the decision to Santos' constituents is going to go a long way toward answering that increasingly pertinent question, when is enough enough for our voters? You know, give you a quick scrub down of Santos, right? So he claimed that he worked for Goldman Sachs. Goldman Sachs says they have no record of his employment. He told voters that he served as an asset manager for Citigroup. Citigroup says it's not true. Santos said he graduated from Burrage College in 2020. The college officials say they have no record of anyone by his name or any variation of it graduating on or around that year. He claimed that he founded an animal rescue nonprofit group, Friends of Pets United, which saved more than 2,500 dogs and cats. The IRS claims that it has no record of any organization by that name. Santos said that a company he owned, which he declined to name, it lost four employees in 2016 when that Pulse nightclub shooting happened down in Orlando. But, you know, there was a review of 49 victims of the shooting, and it shows that not a single damn one of them worked for any of the companies claimed by Santos in his personal biographies. Santos alleged, even still, that 9/11 claimed my mother's life. That's what he said. 9/11 claimed his mother's life. His mother died in 2016. Santos told reporters that he's Jewish. He even told them that he's a direct descendant of a Holocaust survivor. But later, after it was revealed that that was bullshit, that he was not, in fact, Jewish, he asserted that he never claimed to be Jewish, that he was Jew-ish. Right, Jew hyphen ISH, like he exhibits the characteristics of a Jew, so he's Jewish, not Jewish like the religion. That's your fault for missing the point. All right, so we got a let's see here. Tammy says that he lied his ass off, but why are his lies any different than anyone else's? She goes on to write, "Is there's not a different degree of a lie? Absolutely, because like our show says, a lie is a lie." Laura says right here, that talking about the 3rd Congressional District of New York, she says that they can have a recall election. I mean, we saw it with Gavin Newsom, didn't work for him, but hey, it happened. She goes on to write that, but what that dude did was atrocious. She says, however, folks could have dug around and looked this crap up. And that's the point right there, Laura. That is the point. Thank you for saying that, because that is the whole nexus of my argument. Anybody else who runs for president, anybody else who runs for any political office, anybody who runs for any political office, their background, the media failed big time in this one. The voters failed big times in this one, because we just take their word for it, because somewhere somebody said, this politician, that's an honest guy. Man, I have a hard time wrapping my mind around an honest politician like an honest lawyer, but hey, it is what it is. Randy goes on, he says, there must be a way to hold political liars accountable, or it has to be created. I agree, but the problem with that, Randy, is especially here in the United States, it's free speech. Lying is free speech. You have, unless you're under oath to a government official, it's free speech. It's protected speech. So really, it doesn't matter what you say or how you say it, because it is free speech. It doesn't mean you're not going to get consequence, but Tammy agrees as well, 100%. And then Laura, you're right. There wouldn't be anyone left. And actually I read a liberal commentator who actually said something to that narrative. Laura says it's time to look it up. Take the time to look it up. I don't go to the polls without having looked up everything on the ballot. Tammy says that people need to do their own fact checking and stop depending on others to do it for them. Randy says, I watched a lot of the public audits lately. Need audits on the politicians in some way. He says, on point. Thanks, Philip, for informing me. Chris Bond, good to see you, my man. He says that we should put politicians under oath before public debates. Dude, that is, hey, I like that, Chris. We should put them on oath. We should put them under oath for the public debates. And because that should be considered an official capacity as a government official, even though you're not one yet, you're vying for that position. And if you are caught lying, if you're having integrity issues, then bottom line, you need to go. You need to be disqualified immediately. Even though it's protected free speech, you should not be allowed to lie as a political representative. I love that statement, Chris. Everyone else does too, man. Thank you so much for your commentary. So again, guys, episode number 312, A Lie is a Lie. 409-245-9753 if you want to comment or you want to participate in this show, or you can jump on any social media platform where the Philip D. Blackman Show can be found, which is everywhere, or check us out on check out the podcast after we upload it on anywhere you get your podcast, Spotify, iHeart, iTunes, we're everywhere. But you know, the reaction from the press after Santos, right, and the politicos, it has been a proper one. If you pay attention, it's been a mixture of shock and indignation and amusement. Maybe a little embarrassment for not really having uncovered the story, his many lies before the midterms. Should be. But critics have called on Santos to resign his seat. Now, personally, I think that would be the right thing to do. But other people have suggested Republican leadership, they block Santos from joining their ranks should he fail to cross the bar of a personal decency humility. The calls for Santos' resignation, they raise a very unique and a very timely question for voters and members of Congress. If lying is an offense for which someone should resign from office, where does that leave the many, many liars that we have who make up our federal government, not just the politicians, but the bureaucrats in there as well? And, you know, going what we were talking about earlier with Laura, there's a left-wing activist. Again, hey, look, I talk about it all the time, man, that You should get, no matter if you politically agree with them or not, you know, listen to what people say. You might learn something. And I actually found something from a lady named Nina Turner. She's a left-wing activist. And she said that if every member of Congress had lied to voters to get elected, had to resign, there'd be a bipartisan mass resignation. Yeah, we'd have to have elections every day. And she has a point. Because when it comes to politics, lying is about as common as a handshake. And voters recognize it. And they largely tolerate it. But where's the line? That's the question. Where's the line? Where do we say enough is enough? Is it a couple of fibs? Is it a couple white lies? A mulligan for complete fabrications? At what point do voters say enough? You know, Dick Blumenthal, he's a senator, a Democrat out of Connecticut. He told voters that he served in Vietnam. And this isn't an ungenerous paraphrasing. In 2008, his exact words were, quote, I served in Vietnam. But the problem is he never served in Vietnam. In 2003, when he was referring to the Marines who had just returned from overseas operation, he kept using the word we, as in when we returned. And, you know, this is, it's a brazen lie. As brazen lie as any of this has been told by Santos or Trump or Biden or anyone. But do the people of Connecticut give a crap? No, they don't. Because up until 2018, moving on to another state, Pocahontas herself, a Senator Elizabeth Warren, a Democrat out of Maine, I think, she told anyone who would listen, school administrators and voters alike, that she's of Cherokee heritage. A self-awarded designation that certainly didn't really hurt her career opportunities. But the Fordham Law Review, which, with no objection from Warren herself, even billed her as Harvard Law School's first woman of color. Harvard Law School cited her supposed Native American heritage specifically as a means to dismiss critics who said that the school lacked a minority representation. Hey, we got a Native American here, Elizabeth Warren. She's alum, right? But she identified herself for nearly a decade as a minority. The Association of American Schools desk book even said so. Warren is somewhere between 164th and 1,024th Native Americans. I'll get it right here in a minute. Senator Warren has since apologized, and she said this. Well, I'm sorry for the harm that I may have caused actual Native Americans. That's it. That's all it was. But it's worth remembering that in all the years that Warren claimed, in all the years that she claimed that she was a minority, she had exactly as much evidence as Santos did when he claimed that he was Jewish, which is none at all. In fact, in 2012, if you remember correctly, I remember it, man, before the senator eventually dropped the Cherokee Act altogether, she was pressed for proof of her ancestral claims. And here's her response. Her response... Where's the proof, Senator Warren, that you are Native American? Her reply, quote, "My pawpaw had high cheekbones like all the Indians do." That's her proof. Her pawpaw had high cheekbones. It's every bit as funny and as audacious as Santos' Jew-ish defense, right? But what do the voters of Massachusetts care? Don't know, because if not, why not? Then, of course, we got Joe Biden. His lies are way too many in number for a full accounting in one radio show, and I'm not going to go through them all, but I got some highlights. You know, he claimed that he was arrested in South Africa after he demanded a meeting with then-imprisoned Nelson Mandela. Didn't happen. Biden claimed that he met with the leaders of the Tree of Life Synagogue in Pittsburgh after an anti-Semitic terrorist attack on October 28th left 11 worshipers dead. He did not. Joe Biden claimed that he marched with civil rights protesters. He did not. Y'all got to say it with me now. He claimed that he was arrested with civil rights protesters. He did not. He claimed that every time he ran for office, he's done so with the backing of the NAACP. He has not. Biden said that his vice president, this one got me, man. He said his vice president, he awarded his late uncle the Purple Heart at his father's urging. Well, here's the problem. Joe Biden served as a vice president from 2008 to 2016. His father died in 2002. His uncle died in 1999. Both of those significant dates, his dad died in 02, his uncle died in 99. Joe Biden wasn't the vice president. And he said on multiple occasions, anytime that we talk about the military, that his son, Bo, lost his life in Iraq. I'm so sick of hearing that shit because it's not true. Bo did not die in Iraq. He died of brain cancer at Walter Reed Medical Center in the United States. Nearly 6 years after he got back from his deployment. He did not. Biden claimed that he was once in a helicopter that was forced down on the superhighway of terror between Afghanistan and Pakistan. Guess what? He did not. He claimed that he was appointed to the Naval Academy in 1965 by the late Senator J. Caleb Boggs, Republican out of Delaware. He didn't. The late Senator's archive showed nothing of the sort. Biden claimed that the Obama administration, in which he served 8 years as vice president, did not lock up people in cages. He did. He claimed that he immediately the moment that the war in Iraq started, he says, quote, "I came out against the war in Iraq." And here it is, folks. He did not. He claimed that he was shot at He claimed that he was shot at during trips to the Green Zone outside of Baghdad in Iraq. Didn't happen. But he later clarified, though. You know, he says, it's so stupid. Joe Biden said, quote, "I was near where a shot landed." Okay. So the president also claimed that he's led the charge against Slobodan and Milosevic, right? And he didn't. He claimed that he was the first in his family to go to college. He didn't. He said that he predicted the 9/11 terrorist attacks. He didn't. In the late 80s, when Biden first ran for president, he told voters that he attended law school at Syracuse University on a full academic scholarship. Here it is. He did not. He told that same audience that he finished in the top half of his class and that he was named an outstanding student in the political science department as an undergrad at the University of Delaware, and that he graduated from Delaware with 3 undergrad degrees. Every single one of those claims is bullshit. So I guess the question is, right, should he resign from office for all these lies? Well, okay, what about some of them? I guess the facetious question that I have, the rhetorical question, is when is enough enough? You know, voters are apparently very comfortable with the outright lies that Biden has told over the course of his 40 years in office and comfortable enough to elect him as a president. Hell, they were comfortable enough with Donald Trump. I mean, so why then are we being told that the situation with Santos is any different? I mean, it's different enough as to require a unique response. I mean, why should we care about, why should we care more about this obscure freshman congressman than the president of the United States? Why are there scores of reporters and pundits reacting to Santos Thor's remarks along the lines of, "Why, I have never seen nothing like this"? Really? I mean, come on, y'all. I mean, perhaps the answer lies sometime in the future. You know, in our time frame, maybe. Perhaps the thing that makes Santos' situation stand out is that he managed to somehow bullshit and cram enough into a single campaign season in the volume and type of lies that it took Joe Biden and Donald J. Trump literal decades to accumulate. Santos has no business filling a seat in the most powerful deliberative body in the world. Period. End of story. These brazen liars, they can't be trusted with power. And taking a page from Nina Turner's book, this goes for a considerable number of current legislators. But the question of whether they should hold their seats, it's not one for the fellow lawmakers in the commemorate to decide, no. It's for people who put these assholes in office in the first place. You know, lies can be used to get others to form false beliefs and garner their support. It happens all the time. It's well known that false information can influence people's thinking even after they come to realize the information is false. And it really, truly, guys, it makes particular, you know, it makes it particularly concerning when people in leadership positions, they lie. You know, former President Trump, he famously made more than 30,000 false or misleading claims during 4 years of his presidency. That averages out, according to the math, about 20 lies a day. But isn't that just what we've come to expect of politicians? I mean, they rank as one of the United States' most least trusted professions. These politicians, they spin the truth to make themselves seem more capable and more successful than they are, and they appeal to whoever they're talking to at the time. Do you remember watching Beto O'Rourke in Texas when he was running for governor? And it was all staged. He's up there talking about Uvalde, and somebody laughs because he says something absolutely stupid. And he turns around, "Let me tell you something, motherfucker. Look, that first off, he should have been put on his fourth point right then, but that was a lie. That was performance art. He didn't believe in anything that he was saying. He wouldn't bust a grape in a fruit fight, and he's going to call somebody names. Why? Because he knows he's protected. You know, these politicians, they make promises that they know they will not ever, ever be able to keep. Like, "I'm going to have Mexico pay for the border wall." You know, much like us, really, I mean, we'll catch up soon for sure. So the big question is, do voters care? I don't think so. The answer is not really straightforward. I mean, our research has shown that identifying a lie reduces people's belief in it, even if the lie comes from a politician they support. Which is, I think, why Donald Trump has lost his base, because people are starting to wake up to the fact that Donald Trump has and always will be full of shit. However, it doesn't necessarily translate into a reduction of voter support or a change in the voting intentions, because it's about party, not the person. In one study, there was amongst American participants that American participants were exposed to lies and true statements that Trump made in the lead up to 2016 presidential election. Now, followed by fact checkers and these statements, they were all presented this information. Now, although the fact checks led to reduced belief in the inaccurate claims, it didn't translate to reduced voting intentions for Trump supporters, which I don't understand. Now, there was a follow-up study that was used that used the lies from both Trump and Democrat candidate Bernie Sanders, and it was found that when Trump and Sanders supporters were shown many more lies than accurate statements, they began to feel more negatively toward that politician that they support, but only just a little bit. He lied, but it's a lie, not a big deal, right? I've tried to raise my son. I've tried to, pour into my nephew and any young person that I ever had the privilege of mentoring. I always tell them that if you're going to lie about something small, what are you going to do when something big happens? If they're going to lie about something so small or so minute, what happens when we really have something that really kicks us in the teeth as a country, as a populace? They're going to lie to us. The things that leaders lie about, they often matter to a lot of people. If politicians develop this, we'll use the word laissez-faire relationship with the truth, then it really means that they're abusing their position. They're not accountable and they're failing as role models. I mean, if a leader can lie and get away with it, so can I, right? No. But on a broader level, a functional democracy depends on a common appreciation of basic facts. Yeah, we can debate on how to respond to climate change, but a genuine debate is only possible if we first accept the evidence that climate is changing. That's a reality. But if the truth is seen as unattainable, anything goes. If politicians ultimately do and say whatever they want, then why even bother engaging in politics at all? I mean, as we've seen recently, in times of crisis, mutual trust between the government and the public produces a greater compliance and better outcomes for everyone. Lies poison trust. And it's from this perspective, then, that we should not accept any lying from any politician. The media is well advised to hold our elected representatives to account, but they won't. Which brings me back to the central question that I started this segment with. When is enough enough? Well, guys, that is the breakdown. So let me hit some of these comments real quick. We got a bunch of them. All right, so we'll hit. So Randy says a big pile of fabrications, fantasy land. Amen. Laura says, and people ignore it. Yes, they do. She says the emperor's new damn clothes. Amen. Tammy says that for someone who claims to have been part of the civil rights movement, he was very comfortable dropping the N-word. Absolutely. And I've got the video. I'm not going to show it. I really, really want to, but it's not relevant for here. But there's videos out there of Biden doing it when he was working in the Senate. Laura goes on. She says that I'm sure that you could let him know what it feels like to hear shots landing. You're right. But again, like in the Fox News break we just took a while ago, the news break where they said Biden's going to Mexico and it may be a possibility that he's going to go visit the border finally. It's not going to happen. And if it does, it'll be in some place that is very safe, that doesn't have any issues. We'll call it El Paso. Now, they do have issues, but it's very safe. Randy says, anything real over there, guys? Haha, same over here. Amen. Laura says, effing liar, liar, pants on fire. I hate it. Tammy says, F up everywhere, Randy. Randy is out there in the Netherlands as he's already answered. And yes, it is beautiful there. Randy says windmills, not much here. It's overrated. Well, you're the one who chose to live there, my man. Laura says that I think there's a lot of things that are overrated as well. And our trust is lethally poisoned. Guys, again, thank you so much for joining me. Episode 212 312, a lie is a lie. So here's the part. We've come to the part in our show where we take a real special moment. We pause, we reflect, we honor, and we remember that we have brave men and women across the law enforcement spectrum who are out there on the streets as we speak, as I'm doing this show, as you're listening to my show right now, wherever you are, whenever you are. We got heroes out there protecting our city streets while they're actively being protested against. They're actively being assaulted because they chose a ministry. They chose a career, a job that is their calling to serve something in someone bigger than them. Last year in 2022, We lost 228 members of the law enforcement community. 228 families are going through their first year without their loved ones at the dinner table because their hero answered the call from their city, their state, their fellow citizens. For someone, step into the role of a protector of peace. You know, these heroes, they did. And we should never, ever forget their sacrifice. Their sacrifice away from their families, the sacrifice away from their friends, from their personal lives, their risk and losing their lives for a perfect stranger. This year, 2 days ago, we lost our first police officer for 2023. We'll cover him next week, Justin McIntyre. But this week, friends, we're going to continue honoring our fallen men and women in the law enforcement community in every single show that I do from here forward, until people start highlighting that their lives, these police officers' lives, these first responders' lives and their sacrifices, when people start highlighting these officer deaths like they do for the misunderstood criminal, we'll continue to honor these fallen heroes. This week, friends, we're going to take a moment. We're going to honor Riverside County, California Sheriff Deputy Isaiah Cordero in this opening segment. End of watch.
The Philip D. Blackman Show proudly salutes Deputy Isaiah Cordero, 32, of the Riverside County Sheriff's Department in California, who was shot and killed on December 29, 2022, while making a traffic stop. Deputy Cordero served his department for 8 years and was assigned to the motor unit. Sheriff Chad Bianco said in a statement, "Nothing is more heartbreaking than losing a son in a senseless manner when they are living their life for others, serving their community." Deputy Cordero learned from his mother the value of serving and helping others. His goal from the day he was hired was to become a motor deputy. He was a jokester around the station, and all of our deputies considered him their little brother. Deputy Cordero is survived by his parents and brother. On behalf of the Philip D. Blackman Show and a grateful nation, thank you for your service, Deputy Cordero. Deputy Sheriff Isaiah Cordero, end of watch, December 29th, 2022. Rest in peace, Deputy.
You know, I normally don't do this, but this one really got me. The man who shot the deputy we just honored, Deputy Cordero, he had a very extensive criminal history. He'd stabbed a California Highway Patrol canine, another police officer, because these dogs are police officers. He stabbed a California Highway Patrol canine in 2021. At the time of Deputy Cordero's murder, this guy was out on bail, even after having been arrested for failing to appear while waiting a mandatory 25-year-to-life sentence for the incident in which he stabbed a canine. They chose to release this guy who's already in California. God bless California. I cannot wait until the big one because I think the world will be a better place. I know that's a horrible thing to say, but I don't care at this point because everything shitty that happens in our country feels like it begins in California. This guy was released after assaulting a police officer. He stabbed a cop. He stabbed a canine. He stabbed a law enforcement person. He failed to appear for his court, for his mandatory appearance, and he shot and killed Deputy Cordero. Tammy hit it in the chat. She said, "This man did not have to die. This could have been prevented. The laws must change." And with that, Tammy, I agree. Guys, we're going to take another quick commercial break, and we'll be right back with you on the other side. Stick around.
Again, in California, which is still recovering from a recent round of severe weather.
California Office of Emergency Services Director Nancy Ward confirmed that Governor Gavin Newsom has signed a statewide emergency declaration,
which provides additional authority and powers to rapidly deploy aid to impacted communities.
This has parts of California brace for another weather system known as an atmospheric river, which brings trillions of gallons of water vapor from the Pacific to California. It's the same system that brought major flooding and triggered landslides last weekend, killing at least one person.
Fox's Matt Napolitano. State officials are urging people to stay off the roads and prepare for power outages. NFL player DeMar Hamlin still in intensive care after suffering cardiac arrest on the field Monday night, but the Buffalo Bills confirming signs of improvement. Marvel co-stars posting support for actor Jeremy Renner, enduring multiple surgeries to recover from being run over by a snowplow at his home in Nevada.
Renner published a selfie in a hospital bed looking battered and bruised, thanking fans for all their support. Chris Hemsworth responded on the post, "Speedy recovery, buddy." Guardians of the Galaxy star Chris Pratt said, "Continued prayers your way, brother." While Chris Evans wrote, "Tough as nails. Love you, buddy."
Fox's Michelle Polino. The co-founder of Dave & Buster's has died. James Buster Corley was 72.
For the past 40 years, his establishment brought food and games to millions of customers. The idea for Dave & Buster's was hatched in the late 70s when Corley was running a restaurant in Dallas near a business operated by David Corriveau that offered entertainment and games for adults. The pair teamed up to open their first dining and games establishment in 1982. And since then, the business grew with scores of Dave & Buster's locations across the U.S.
Fox's Hillary Barsky. There's no official word yet on a cause of death. Stocks snap a losing streak. The Dow up 133. Lisa Brady, Fox News.
Budweiser presents Real Men of Genius.
Real Men of Genius.
Today, we salute you, Mr. Pro Wrestling Wardrobe Designer.
Mr. Pro Wrestling Wardrobe Designer.
While lesser designers would shy away from putting 300-pound men in spandex, you embrace it.
Yes, you do.
Pushing fashion to its limits, literally, you pair tights with a cape, a leotard with a mask, leather boots with a thong.
Oh, looking good.
All understated ways of saying, I'm going to rip your head off and look fabulous doing it. So this bud's for you, Mr. Pro Wrestling Wardrobe Guy. Because without you, a man crushing another man's head in his arms would just look silly.
Mr. Pro Wrestling Wardrobe Designer.
All right, guys, welcome back. Episode 312 of Lie is a Lie, 409-245-9753. If you want to call the show, guys, again, thank you so much. We're wrapping it up as we progress here. You know, as a conservative commentator, yeah, I've been attacked time and time again by the liberal left for my views and my opinions. Every show that I've done, I've kept my phone number on the screen and the comments open in every show to allow people who disagree with my position, feel free to comment. And I don't turn anyone away. And for the most part, I will almost entertain every single conversation and opinion because I want to keep it an open forum for all people of all beliefs and all backgrounds to contribute to the conversation. I've always said time and time again, look, I'm not the ultimate. I'm not the end all be all. I'm not the know all. What I am is a person with an opinion who's done some research. And if you disagree with anything I'm saying, let's talk it out. Maybe you know something I don't. But that doesn't stop a lot of these tit bags, these crybabies, from still sending out these private messages declaring from any mountaintop that Philip D. Blackman is a racist and a bigot. All right, cool. You know, one time that accusation, it bothered me. It bothered me to my core because I took it personal that someone would attack my character in such a hateful way. I mean, never mind the fact that my very first friend in the world was named Rocky Villarreal. He's a little Hispanic kid out of the small town of Mount Pleasant, Texas, our hometown. I got a black couple, Donald and Vernita Patton. That's their names. I've adopted them as my second parents. And they adopted me as their fourth son. I'm married to a Hispanic woman. I've served and I've risked my life to fight beside and to save the lives of my fellow brothers and sisters. And I never asked when they called me that there was a bomb, hey, what color are the people sitting near it, right? It never happened. What's their sexual orientation? What's their religious background? Never happened. Even the ones that weren't white like me, I still served. You know, these attacks, they've increased over the years, I've recognized. And there's this increased narrative and this opinion that all white people are racist. And if you're a white person and you're, then you are by default inherently racist because of the color of your skin and not the content of your character. A judgment from these same people who will champion the words and hail Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. They're doing exactly what he spoke against in his iconic I Have a Dream speech in August of 63. If you're white and you get offended or you attempt to refute any racist accusations, then by the current Messiah, Robin DiAngelo, a self-race-hating rich white woman, as she puts it, if you get offended or if you try to defend yourself, that's just further proof that you're racist. And if you get upset at the accusation, that's a sign of your white fragility. There's no way around it at all. You're racist, and that's just the way it is. That is what they want you to know. Your fragile ego is why you got mad. As I had some little pissant, that's why you got big mad. And not the offense of a garbage commentary. But one of the greatest comforts that I have, that I've come to embrace, is the reality that those people who's going to call you racist, they're only doing so to score these imaginary points in a game that is make-believe. Just like Monday night, I was accused by a couple of douchebags I went to high school with, by the way, 26 years ago, that's how old I am, of being a racist. And it made me laugh to my core because that's a telltale sign that these intellectual midgets is that they're ready to scream racist without providing a single shred of evidence. Apparently, just an accusation is enough to get these like-minded trolls to shake their head in agreement as if there's some type of credence to their position. But contrary to their belief, and the belief of subscribers of Robin DiAngelo, of all fucking people, of her doctrine, not all white people are racist. And that's the topic of the last 5 minutes of this show. One final thing. You know, over the years, I've lost count of the number of times that I've read or I've heard the claim that all white people are racist. Sweeping statements about entire groups, they've never, ever been a good idea. I always talk about don't paint with a broad brush. Because you're going to get a lot of things dirty that have no reason to be dirty. For centuries, it was widely assumed that different racial groups had distinct innate characteristics or deficiencies that determined their behavior, their actions, their outcomes. I mean, in fact, one of the most difficult challenges for black people, we'll use them as an example. One of the most difficult challenges for black people, as I talked about earlier, was dispelling that widespread belief that members of their own group inherently possessed less intelligence. This whole concept of biologically based differences in intellectual capacity between races, particularly between white and black people, it was even one of the more primary justifications for the establishment and the perpetuation of the transatlantic slave trade in the 18th century. It was during the 19th and 20th centuries that there were lots of tests and experiments done to prove that black people had a lower IQ than white people. In 1839, an American physician, his name was Samuel Morton, I believe, who believed the polygyny, right? The idea that different races arose independently. He published Carania Americana, I think is the name of the book, in which he primarily argued that racial differences in intelligence and brain size, that it existed. So it was said in 1839 by a guy who is a self-proclaimed professional and an expert in the case. Because he said it, everybody took it at face value and ran. Racial determinists, they maintained that their stance that black people's disadvantages were caused by biological factors, even after the slave trade was abolished. And it was obviously, friends, it was not the case. As the appalling living conditions endured by a lot of black Americans, or at the time they weren't Americans, we'll call them African Americans, at the time they were the result of these flawed social systems, not flawed genetics. It's during these areas that the notion that there was such a natural and genetic differences between races that led to discrimination. And it was used to justify the restrictions on reproduction. And in numerous ways, it made black people feel like second-class citizens. Then. Yeah, I think we've worked hard to distance ourselves from such ideas. Blanket statements and broad generalizations about any group, especially when derogatory, they're no longer generally acceptable. If you remember, after 9/11, Islamophobia grew. There's a lot of efforts that were made to combat the idea that all Muslims were terrorists. And our society's come to recognize that generalizing the behavior of a few people to represent the normative behavior of the defining characteristic of an entire group, that is unreasonable. Wen Yee, right, or Kanye West, I'm going to just call him Kanye because I refuse to say Yee, When he journalized about an entire group based on his interactions with a small subset of that group, a media frenzy happened. But we don't hear the same thing when it goes against, for Jewish, absolutely. People get all kinds of upset about that. But when, you know, when because Kanye West made a broad blanket statement about Jews, and it was considered racist, it was bigoted, it was everything else, but yet we still have these commentators, we still have these pundits, these self-indulging douchebags out there who will continue to press the idea and press the notion that all white people are racist. They're racist by default because they're white. But yet that is okay. You know, a statement like all white people are racist, it ought to be held to the same standard of a moral reprehensibility as a sweeping generalization like all blacks are violent. If I said all blacks are violent or all Muslims are terrorists, that would be called racist as hell. But to say all white people are racist, you're right, they are. But occasionally the opposite occurs, especially in the mainstream media or academic institutions. In some ways, making these declarations has become a near symbolic representation of moral courage and virtue, right? By asserting that all white people are racist, you supposedly, you're protecting the oppressed and you're taking a valiant stand against the oppressor, the institutional racism. What a joke. The widely held belief is that reverse racism does not exist, implying that people of color, particularly black people, they can't be racist toward white people because they don't have the power. Well, I'm going to tell you right now, reverse racism does not exist. I hate that term because it's not reverse racism. It's just plain old-fashioned racism. No need to add a word before it that reverse does nothing for it. It is racism. As one historian from Rutgers University in New Jersey, he put it, he said that racism, quote, racism is exclusively property of white, mostly European people in this part of the world, talking about the Western Hemisphere. You know, it's that line of thinking that increasingly justifies the use of slurs against white people. There was a video that recently resurfaced on social media that showed yet another professor from Rutgers University referring to white people as villains. There was a Twitter space once upon a time that was dedicated to calling for the genocide of white people. And it was seen as trivial and inconsequential and even amusing. I came across a short book that was called Black Jokes About White Folks a few years ago, and it was solely dedicated to making fun of white people and mocking their customs and their stereotypical habits. Could you imagine it going the other way? The outrage. The refocus of the definition of racism is to concentrate on a systemic and structural power rather than actions, attitudes, and behaviors and ideas. It's meant that such things are seen as unproblematic or without negative consequence, which can mean that a white person being attacked, mocked, or discriminated against is excluded from meeting the criteria as a victim simply because they are white, which is the epitome of racism. The issue here is that we really shouldn't simply change the rules to justify a wrong as we see fit. They're still trying to redefine what racism means, but as a power structure, not as an action, which is dumb. Simply because some members of a marginalized group believe they lack the power to perpetuate racism, it doesn't preclude them from doing so. Racism is not just immoral, it's evil, and the evil doesn't need institutional support or systemic power to manifest itself in any way. So what happens when you absolve yourself from the ability to do wrong? Well, you're going to do more of it as your conscience allows or provide an excuse for you to do so. No single individual and no group should ever be given a permanent status of victimhood. None should be given a permanent status of being an oppressor. None should be given a permanent status of being a perpetrator of evil. Neither should anyone be excused from being able to commit any wrongdoing. History clearly demonstrates why. So we wouldn't repeat past mistakes. But again, if history's shown us anything, we don't learn from our history. Things don't have to be a zero-sum power game. We can acknowledge that the social inequalities, they persist, and that discrimination occasionally rears its ugly head without blaming all white people, implicitly or explicitly, for the problems that many groups face. Problems that would not automatically disappear if all racism was eradicated from society. If you're not what you are not, and I learned this bit of wisdom from my wife years ago. You're not what someone says you are just because they say it. Who the fuck are they? Their position, rather a minority or a scholar. It doesn't make them an authority on your life or the lives of others. So, the next time someone calls you racist, I want you to stop and consider the source. Man, stop trying to convince someone of something that you're not. I want you to lean back on that notion of the criminal justice system that you are innocent until proven guilty. It's not your job to prove your innocence. It's their job to prove your guilt. And they have absolutely zero interest in doing any of that because they don't possess the intellectual capacity to dive into that debate. It's a lot easier just to say, you're racist. Why? Well, you just are. Right? I mean, what is the logic? But here's the thing. Joe, Kelvin, and anybody else who has a problem, I'm not going to go away because you think I should. Matter of fact, let's do it this way. I want to say it to you, right? I'm not going to go away because you think I should. I'm not going to stop doing my show because you disagree with my stance. I'm not going to change a single thing that I'm doing. If I do make changes, it's because I choose to change, not because you think I should. I'm not going to stop doing my shows because you think you know me. In reality, I didn't like the pricks that I went to school with back then because they were fake-ass kids who turned into fake-ass adults, and I still don't give a crap about them anyway. Instead of letting yourself be pressured to admit or to yield to something that you know is not true, I want you to stand up and be counted and tell them all to go straight to hell on rollerblades or gasoline draws. If you're a follower and you support my show, hey, thank you. If you're a hater who likes to speak out the side of your neck about Philip Blackman is racist and bigoted show, hey, thank you too for keeping my name relevant. Thank you so much for keeping my show relevant in your life. But at the end of the day, just like everyone else, you can also go straight to hell with rollerblades and gasoline drawers. I'm just saying. All right, guys. So I want to hit these comments before we punch out for the show, guys. That is it for me. All right, so here it is. All right, Laura Harlow says, I studied a lot of them in my anthro and psych studies. Chris Bond said, it's not reverse racism, just racism. I didn't see the comment, but hey, I'm glad to know we're on the same page. Tammy says, isn't it racist the way white people are being singled out for everything? Well, you know, Tammy, that's your white fragility. Even though you're not white, your skin's white, or it's lighter, so it's colorism at that point, but yeah. Absolutely. But anyway, Demi says also the definition of racism does not specify a color. She says people attach a color to it. Laura Harlow. And we should call it out when we encounter it. Amen. Every single time. Demi says it can't. Oh, shit. All right. Well, hey, sound cut out. Are we still good? Are we not good? Is my sound good? Man, usually I've got my producer will run in here and square me away. I'm not real sure. Hopefully we're still pumping. Yeah, we're still live on the radio, so we'll just go with that. Randy says low class, middle class, high class, elite. We don't need them anymore. If we share, we could all be good class or something. Amen. Tammy says, damn, I'm sure that they're on a blast right now just from the body language. Randy says, it's dividing all people. All right, so apparently we are good. I do apologize. Tammy says we missed the rant. At what point, you know, this is the Philip D. Blackman Show. I got time. At what point did my audio cut out? Was it at the beginning of one final thing? Where was the disconnect? Because look, my rant, it always works great, and I love the fact that I love the fact of being able to kick people in the face every chance I get. So, at the end of the day, not all white people are racist because y'all say it is. Not at all. You know, white people are, just because somebody says you're racist, that doesn't mean anything either. Again, I'm going to tell you like I've told you before. And maybe I see if I can pick up where I left off, you know. The idea, I'm not going to go away because any one of you think I should. I'm not going to stop doing these shows, the Philip D. Blackman Show. I'm not going to stop providing commentary because you think you know me. I mean, truly, to Joe, to Kelvin, to the rest of you dickheads out there who have a problem, you know, hey, right on, man. I didn't like you pricks in school, and I don't like you now because your fake kids are turned into fake adults. And I still don't give a crap about your heartbeat. So instead of letting yourself, any of you, be pressured to admit anywhere in your life that or to yield onto something that you know is not true, I want you to stand up. I want you to be counted. Tell all of these people to go straight to hell. Go straight to hell and rollerblades gasoline drawers. And if you're a follower of my show, right on. Thank you so much. If you're a hater who likes to speak out the side of your neck about Philip Blackman and what you think you know about his racist and bigoted show, thank you as well for keeping my name and my show relevant in your life. But again, like I said a while ago, all of you can go straight to hell with gasoline drawers on too. I don't care. That is the beautiful thing about the Philip D. Blackman Show because it's in my name. All right, so I think we might have got it when you went full frontal giggity. Laura says, all right, so la, 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 it was only 15 seconds when the switch happened. So Chris Bond says, I know you, bro. I've watched you work with hundreds of troops and never treat one different than the other. I've always been inspired by the way you cared about everyone. Man, I'm an equal opportunity offender. I treat everyone the same regardless. Well, ladies and gentlemen, it is, oh, shit. All right, so we are out of time. Thank you so much for doing it, for joining my show, man. Look, I appreciate each and every one of you for tuning into this show because we seek to not only provide that middle ground analysis, but to remain consistent to the inconvenient truth that so many people refuse to see. These politicians are lying to you. The only way you can make it stop is you vote them out. Hold them accountable. And if you happen to be a part of that group who thinks that who subscribes to the notion that all white people are racist, 409-245-9753 is my number. It'll ring 24/7. If you want to shoot me a message at thepdbshow@gmail.com or thepdbshow@aboutfaceradio. I've got all my pertinents right there at the bottom. If you subscribe to that notion, hey, shoot me a message. I would love to have you come on my show. I would love to debate you because you're full of shit. You're part of the bigoted problem. You're part of the racist problem. And who are you to be any authority on anybody else's life? Just because you think, you know, you're searching hard, looking for something that is there that doesn't exist. So if you want to debate, I will debate with anyone about any topic, anytime, any place, any day of the week, twice on Sundays if your schedule allows. Come on over. The water's warm. Because I'm a supporter of free speech. I'm a supporter of free thinking. I'm a supporter of America. I'm a dedicated enemy to hypocrites, to liars, to promoters of mob justice, racism, and bigotry. So if you fall into that group, hey man, fornicate yourself. But until next time, friends, thank you so much for your service and your patriotism to this country. Without our men and women in uniform, our veteran community, and great Americans like yourself, man, our country would be a very different place because we are the only ones who stand between freedom and chaos. As always, ladies and gentlemen, happy hump day. Happy New Year. Don't let your dog tags dangle in the dirt this year, man. Stay on your feet and you continue to fight that good fight against everything that you see is wrong. If you love your freedom, you thank a veteran. If you love your peace, you thank a police officer. And if you see a first responder, man, give them a high five handshake. Tell them job well done because, man, it wasn't just very long ago that y'all went from hero to zero like that. So God bless each and every one of you. God bless the United States of America. Catch me every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday at 5 o'clock p.m. Central Standard Time right here. Guys, as long as the Lord's willing, the creeks don't rise, I'll see you Friday as we cover our media mashup covering all the latest and greatest that's happened this week. My name is Philip Blackman, and I'm out of here.